The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
As I've said from the beginning, ours was not a campaign, but rather an incredible and great movement made up of millions of hardworking men and women who love their country and want a better, brighter future for themselves and for their family.
That is President-elect Donald Trump speaking early in the morning. I think it was like 2:30 a.m. in the U.S. there. And, of course, many of the analysts are calling this the greatest political upset of modern times. Pretty amazing evening as it unfolded. Through the night, I saw most of it. Was dozing off here and there through bits of it as it drug on. But what a turning point. That was Trump again and his acceptance. And now we have 70-some days, I believe, until he moves the train into the Oval Office. The speech, by the way, just seemed a lot more gracious, and even the tone in which it was delivered, it seemed more calm than usual. And so he's making an effort to become more presidential and has talked now about trying to bring the country together. Some of the same things true too that President Obama was talking about 8 years ago. And then, of course, when you look at all of the promises too, there were some similarities last night when you compare it to what President-elect Obama said on that chilly Chicago evening some 8 years ago. This is, again, Trump from last night, clip four.
We are going to fix our inner cities and rebuild our highways, bridges, tunnels, airports, schools, hospitals. We're going to rebuild our infrastructure, which will become, by the way, second to none. And we will put millions of our people to work as we rebuild it.
Hospitals, schools, airports, tunnels, everything. Second to none. And he went on to talk about taking care of the veterans. Promises, promises. Well, we could get into how so many of those will go unfulfilled. But perhaps I can save some of that for another time. A little further on, after he talked about the veterans, he continued and said this, clip five.
We will embark upon a project of national growth and renewal. I will harness the creative talents of our people, and we will call upon the best and brightest to leverage their tremendous talent for the benefit of all. It's going to happen. We have a great economic plan. We will double our growth and have the strongest economy anywhere in the world. At the same time, we will get along with all other nations willing to get along with us. We will be. We'll have great relationships. We expect to have great, great relationships. No dream is too big. No challenge is too great. Nothing we want for our future is beyond our reach. America will no longer settle for anything less than the best.
So like we heard 8 years ago, the future looks bright indeed, looking at it from his perspective and certainly from the perspective of all of Mr. Trump's supporters. And it certainly, as I said on yesterday's program, it's not something that very many people in the United States, whether they were pollsters or commentators or the so-called experts, very few people expected this to happen. Nobody expected it. What was it when he first got into the race 19, 20 months ago? And it wasn't that long ago when people were talking about his party, the Republican Party, divided as if this was the end of the Republican Party. And now look, now, I mean, once the votes are finally completed or all counted, you may have a winner in this case that gained more than 300 electoral votes, making this essentially a landslide victory. He did better than Romney did 4 years ago among blacks, something no one thought would happen. He did better among Hispanics than Romney did four years ago, something no one thought was possible, given what he discussed about the wall and so on. He won all those battleground states. You can see why now that Hillary Clinton and President Obama and all of them were going up to Michigan on Monday, a state that so many of the pundits thought, well, they'd have that in the bag, the Democrats. As it was, they were going to Michigan because that battleground state, like so many of the others, they were leaning in Trump's direction. What a turnaround for the Republican Party, which not only won the presidency, but the party retained control of both the House and the Senate. Again, so many of the experts thought that they'd lose the Senate. And so here you have the Republican Party now, which was on its last breath in so many ways. Now it has control of the White House, or it will, the Senate, the House. You can break it down to the state level as well. There's a Republican majority in a majority of state houses across the United States. And next year, two-thirds of America's governors, state governors, two-thirds of them are going to be Republicans. That's quite a victory for the Republican Party. And of course, now you look at the Democrat side, which had its problems back in the primary season too, in the fighting between Sanders and Clinton. But they come out as the big loser. And President Obama as well. We'll get into that a little bit more in just a second. But then you have the typical reaction coming from the press and from the experts, from some world leaders, and just from average citizens coming from the left, who now are, I mean, they are frightened. They're frightened at what it means, at what a Trump administration means. From the AP just this morning, Canada and the prospect of Americans moving there appears to have drawn so much online interest that it's knocked out the country's immigration website. Canada's immigration website knocked out because of people searching for details on moving or immigrating to Canada. Well, and then you have, of course, the big loser in all of this, besides Hillary Clinton, the major media, the mainstream media. You'd be hard-pressed to find more long faces on television last night compared to any other election cycle. And then that it took so long to declare Trump the winner, that seemed a little bit odd to me as well. But of course, you know, you saw the coverage, you read it, I read it, which made it seem so unlikely in the lead up to it. I mean, there were basically three options: Hillary in a landslide, Hillary in a close race, and then maybe if Trump could somehow eke out a victory, it would just be by the slimmest of margins. And so, of course, Trump wins in a landslide. But most of them going in, thought it would be the other way around. This montage here puts together some of the statements along the way about the supposed Hillary landslide victory. This is clip two.
A lot of people have no idea that Trump is headed for a historic defeat. That's why I think the larger the defeat, in a sense, the healthier it will be for the Republican Party, at least if it doesn't bring Paul Ryan's speakership down with him and there's a kind of healthy divided government, because it might be a wake-up call to those Republicans who have existed in this little thought bubble of their own that this isn't a winning form of politics.
Then this election, not only does Florida fall to Hillary Clinton, but this election overall, we could be talking landslide. And so
Hillary Clinton today is more likely to win in a landslide that would not only have an impact on this race, but realign the country politically to some extent than Donald Trump is to win narrowly or at all.
Is. I mean, let's say it is a 4-point margin. That would translate to an electoral majority and probably electoral landslide for Hillary Clinton.
So margin of error, they mean margin of error. This could be tight. Or it could be a landslide for Hillary.
Okay, so everybody is saying, most analysts are saying that Hillary Clinton's going to win in a landslide and that Ohio won't much matter this time around.
Do you agree? You know, if this collapse of support among women that you talked about, Senator, if that spreads among women voters all across the country, he's going to lose by a landslide and they could lose the Senate and the House.
GOP officials now fear that if Donald Trump loses by a landslide, he could take down their congressional majorities with him.
Not only am I concerned about the presidential race, I'm concerned about what the impact on down ballot races, including
being overly cautious just because I'm trying to be a little risk averse in my predictions, but I think that she's going to have a very good night tomorrow.
So the technical term for that, if she's anywhere near your prediction, would be blowout.
Landslide. I give a landslide. I don't know.
You call that a landslide.
I would say a landslide.
My bad.
That's a shellacking. That's what we were waiting for. The landslide victory, the blowout, a total collapse of the Republican Party. Here again. I mean, what little credibility the major media had going in, it's been completely shredded. Newsweek actually printed a cover that said Madam President right before the election on the assumption that she'd win. This is from the New York Post. Newsweek may have jumped the gun, but well, I'd say so. They may have jumped the gun by printing a special edition featuring Hillary Clinton as the winner and sending it to stores before the election took place. The third-party service that makes the magazine's commemorative issues gave the green light to print the edition which reads Madam President. It later hit the stands at a Barnes & Noble outlet. The polls show Hillary Clinton with a commanding lead, and a business decision was made to print the Clinton issue first while continuing to work on the Trump issue. That's what the magazine's CEO said. Well, I mean, she has such a commanding lead. Let's just go ahead and print the issue before the election. And then they had to go back and destroy those. Madam President. This is from the New York Times today. I mentioned the headline from yesterday about just how optimistic it looked for Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, the dark, pessimistic vision coming from the Trump campaign. The New York Times says all the dazzling technology. The Times is a little more contrite this morning, as you can imagine. All of the dazzling technology, the big data, and the sophisticated modeling that American newsrooms bring to the fundamentally human endeavor of presidential politics could not save American journalism from yet again being behind the story, behind the rest of the country. The news media, by and large, missed what was happening all around it. And it was the story of a lifetime. The numbers weren't just a poor guide for election night. They were an off-ramp away from what was actually happening. And of course, a lot of this, it tries to put the blame here on the polling and the numbers that were coming in. But so much of this coverage was the way it was because of the bias. That's so obvious now. So obvious, rises to the surface, particularly every fourth year during a presidential election cycle. No one predicted a night like this that Donald J. Trump would pull off a stunning upset over Hillary Clinton and win the presidency. We're all shocked. I mean, I'm surprised. As much as I knew going in, it was certainly a possibility. And I've discussed with you that you know, you can see God's hand in these elections. That's what it's going to boil down to. But still, you can't help but to hear the nonstop coverage. Here's how it's going to turn out. She has a commanding lead. Newsweek's already got the cover printed. It says the misfire on Tuesday night was about a lot more than a failure in polling. It was a failure to capture the boiling anger of a large portion of the American electorate that feels left behind by a selective recovery, betrayed by trade deals that they see as threats to their jobs and disrespected by establishment Washington, Wall Street, and mainstream media. That's the New York Times today singing a bit of a different tune than yesterday. It says journalists didn't question the polling data when it confirmed their gut feeling that Mr. Trump could never in a million years pull it off. They portrayed Trump supporters who still believed he had a shot as being out of touch with reality. In the end, it was the other way around. That's right, the media we now see, using, of course, hindsight. It's the media, the major media, that was totally out of touch. And it says here, finally, it was just a few months ago that so much of the European media failed to foresee the vote in Britain to leave the European Union. Election 2016. Thy name is Brexit. What a year it's been. You talk about earth-shaking developments. Going back to Brexit in June. And then now this. What a dramatic... I mean, say what you will about how conservative Mr. Trump is compared to maybe some of the others that were in the Republican primary. But still, you have to look at the goals and the agenda and compare it to the Obama administration. And not only the ones that work with him there in the White House, but the Department of Justice, the FBI, the representatives at the United Nations, the Secretary of State. I mean, all of these positions that are going to change. America's government's going to look very different in 70-some days. And so what should we be watching for? The Bible tells us to watch and to pray always. That's what Jesus said. Watch and pray. He said, this generation shall not pass away until all these prophecies be fulfilled. And so take heed. Don't get caught up in the things of this world, the cares of this life, that you're caught by surprise. Look at these many earth-shaking developments. Watch and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. We are drawing close to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And Jesus said, watch world events. Watch unto prayer, as it says in 1 Peter 4. If we do this, well, my father says it in the Epistles of Peter booklet. He says the fact that Christ's return is so near should change our behavior. The knowledge of Christ's imminent return should make us urgent spiritually. It really should. How is your sense of urgency, given what's happening in this world? The United States is facing some terrifying times. And here again, you can expect the optimism. You can expect all of the promises. We hear it every 4 years. But look at the problems facing the United States. And as I've noted before, even with respect to some of the sound bites we hear coming from Donald Trump, you don't see much or hear much about God. There was a reference last night in his acceptance speech to his parents looking down from heaven above. Presumably because they died and went to heaven. That's what most people generally assume, even if they're not very religious. And yet there was no acknowledgement of the Creator God, who actually does reside in heaven. No thanks to God. I think there may have been a statement somewhat to that end from Mr. Pence, but not from Donald Trump. And yet look at the terrifying times. Look at the terrifying times that are now just ahead of us. Watch and pray always. So what should we now? Now that, I mean, it's been 19, 20 months, as I said yesterday. It just seems like it's gone on and on and on. A never-ending campaign. And now the election of 2016 is behind us. And what should we be watching for? Well, for one, and I got into this some yesterday, I think we need to be watching President Obama's response to this. He's got a little more than 70 days left. And you talk about losers last night. He's one of them. He was out there in the lead up to this, as you well know, talking about his legacy, urging people, urging Democrats to get out and vote. And, of course, there were commentators galore describing Hillary Clinton's presidency as being like a third term of Obama, President Obama. And President Obama over the weekend was saying, look, we've got to get out there and support Hillary Clinton or all of the progress that we've made might go right down the drain. Well, there's quite a few people now that have given Donald Trump a mandate. And it certainly is a loud statement, a reaction, a backlash to what so many have seen in these last several years. This is from the Washington Times. It says, as President Obama runs out the clock on his 8-year tenure, analysts say he still has plenty of business left undone, and they expect him to follow the lead of other presidents and issue a series of rules to add to his list of executive orders, to continue his record-setting pace of commutations, and perhaps add a controversial pardon or two into the mix. It says here, or it's quoting someone, an analyst, saying, I do think a pardon for Uma and Weiner might happen. Uma Abedin, the assistant there for Hillary Clinton and her estranged husband. In any event, it says later, truly lame duck presidents are freed from political concerns, don't have to worry about other elections, and can even help take political heat off their successor or try to lock in their own policies that their successor might not fully support. And so Obama was, I'm sure, going into this election last night assuming Mrs. Clinton would win. And now he knows. Now he knows who his successor will be. And more than that, he knows he has just 70, 71 days left. It says, for Mr. Obama, who already has set records for the most expansive regulatory agenda in U.S. history, his final months offer a chance to pad his lead and plow new ground, particularly on energy and environmental issues. One major factor in the pace of lame duck action is how certain a president is that someone who shares his values is succeeding him. Until yesterday, he was fairly certain, I'm sure, that she would succeed him. What we've seen, it says, in the past is when the outgoing president is replaced by somebody from the opposition party, then in the waning months of their presidency, there's a burst of regulatory and rulemaking activity. That's quoting from a political scientist from the University of Chicago. Definitely something to watch for. As I covered with you on yesterday's program, I mean, when he's there fulfilling a prophecy spoken of in Daniel 8. It's definitely something we need to keep our eyes open to. How will the current lame duck administration respond to the stunning results from yesterday's election? At thetrumpet.com today, Callum Wood has an article up there, November 9th, and the onslaught against Israel. And he brings out some of these same concerns. Many in Israel fear that with the election behind them, United States President Barack Obama will again turn his attention to Israel and finish what he started, the creation of a Palestinian state. It's on the agenda. It's on the agenda. Says, until now, President Obama has kept quiet on the issue for fear of shedding negative light on the Clinton campaign. But post-November 8th, that no longer matters. He had to kind of keep it under wraps so that she wouldn't lose support from Jewish constituents or even from Israel. It says many are beginning to postulate that President Obama will look to the United Nations Security Council as a means to enforce his will on Israel. And then Callum Wood here quotes from a recent piece by Carolyn Glick. This is from a week or two ago. She says, open season on Israel at the Security Council will commence November 9th. That's today. That's today. It's going to be open season on Israel now that the election is behind us. Glick says, Obama has waited 8 years to exact his revenge on Israel for not supporting his hostile, strategically irrational policies, and he has no interest in letting bygones be bygones. He's got an agenda. He's had it from the beginning. Fundamentally transform the United States. We went through this yesterday. And so certainly, one of the big trends to watch for is how this current administration, this lame duck administration, responds to the election of Donald Trump. Callum Wood's article here says UN Security Council resolutions are law. Israel has always had a bulwark, though, of defense at the UN. America. I mean, the United States has always stood up for Israel. We've always vetoed these resolutions that condemn Israel. He says here the U.S. has used its veto power to trump the pro-Palestinian majority time after time. Without the veto, Israel would have been subject to a host of nation-crushing resolutions. But come November 9th, the tables could drastically turn. The Obama administration needs to do nothing at all. Just sit back and allow the anti-Israel resolutions to surge in. With nobody to stop the resolutions, Israel would sit near indefensible in the Security Council's crosshairs. And then this, continuing from Carolyn Glick's piece from a couple weeks ago, she says, from reports to date, it appears that shortly after the U.S. elections on November 8th, the Malaysians or Egyptians will submit a Palestinian-backed resolution that defines Israeli communities in United Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria as illegal. If the resolution is brought to a vote, the U.S. will fail to veto it. Now, we've talked often, and Callum brings this out in his piece, about this severing of ties between the brothers, Judah, Ephraim, Manasseh. We've talked about the fighting that's prophesied. We've talked about the relationship that's been damaged. It's discussed in Bible prophecy. And of course, ultimately, it leads to Israel going to the Assyrians. Going to the Assyrians for help, because there's no help to be found from America. What will little Israel be able to do if it doesn't have the United States there at the UN to defend it? I mean, all of this could be happening as soon as this week. He quotes from a Charles Krauthammer article as well. a recent piece by him. He writes the result would be not just perpetual war, but incalculable damage to Israel. Israel would be hauled endlessly into courts, both national and international, to face sanctions, boycotts, and arrest of its leaders even. All this for violating a UN mandate to which no Israeli government, left or right, could possibly accede. And so there is a lot to watch for. Now with the election, a day behind us, so much has happened. This year, as I say, it was alluded to at the end of that article I quoted earlier. Brexit in June. I mean, prophetic events are moving fast. And we talked during this election cycle, during this campaign season, just how some of the views and even some of the statements and the plans that Donald Trump has put forward, how it could ultimately impact the European Union. I'll get to Europe or the world's reaction to Mr. Trump's victory last night here in just a second, but I thought I'd also just make a few comments on race relations in the United States. That's another thing to really keep our eyes on. And we've had a lot to say. We at thetrumpet.com, we've had a lot to say about the racial problems, the racial divide in the United States. And these problems are not going to go away with a new administration. They're not going to go away. They're not going to go away because this administration coming in is now going to be more inclined to support the police. The problems are too deep-seated. They're there. I thought this comment last night on CNN from CNN commentator Van Jones, this is how he responded to the Trump victory. Clip 3.
People have talked about a miracle. I'm hearing about a nightmare. It's hard to be a parent tonight for a lot of us. You tell your kids, don't be a bully. You tell your kids, don't be a bigot. You tell your kids, do your homework and be prepared. And then you have this outcome, and you have people putting children to bed tonight, and they're afraid of breakfast. They're afraid of, how do I explain this to my children? I have Muslim friends who are texting me tonight saying, should I leave the country? I have families of immigrants that are terrified tonight. This was many things. This was a rebellion against the elites. True, it was a complete reinvention of politics and polls, it's true. But it was also something else. We've talked about race. I mean, we've talked about everything but race tonight. We've talked about income. We've talked about class. We've talked about region. We haven't talked about race. This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president, in part. And that's the part where the pain comes.
The pain is still there. And all of these problems, these racial problems, these racial divisions that were supposed to be solved, or at least made better 8 years ago, it's so much worse today. And now with the election of this terrifying new leader, this leader that makes, in this case, a parent afraid of breakfast this morning, afraid to even talk to his children because of this white lash, as he calls it, against a black president. Now it's racism. Now it's racism to put Donald Trump in office. That's the message coming through loud and clear on CNN. In The Guardian, a similar message. This from Stephen Thrasher this morning, right here in the UK. It's a terrifying moment for America, he said. This is terrifying. That word's being used a lot by the left. This is frightening. Thrasher says, hold tight to the ones you love living in black and brown and yellow and native skin. Hold tight to us, because we'll have to face white people who think we're rapists. Do you think the racial divisions are going away anytime soon? He says we'll have to face a nation that wants to stop and frisk us, hold tight to us, because mass incarceration is actually going to get worse. And more of our brothers and sisters are going to be disappeared. More of our brothers and our sisters, they're just going to disappear. We're going to be living as strangers in our land, among people who believe they've taken the country back from us. So hold tight to us, please, and to each other. That's someone writing in The Guardian in response to Donald Trump's victory. Well, 8 years ago when President Obama, or Senator Obama, then Senator Obama, was going through his transition, preparing for his inaugural address, and just receiving praise from every direction because of how he was healing America's race wounds. And my father was there as a lone voice. He was a lone voice warning America that simmering racial passions and hatreds, how that it was going to boil over, how that the race card would be used, and used often. He wrote in June of 2008, many people believe that Mr. Obama is going to greatly improve race relations, but our racial problems are going to rapidly get much worse. And then he went on to say that the race card's going to be played often for political gain. And lo and behold, last night, it was played yet again for political gain. That's definitely something to keep our eyes on, to watch for. And then finally, something else to keep our eyes open to, and that is the way that the world reacts to a Trump administration, particularly in Europe, but not just Europe. Carefully watch the reaction that this world has in the days and in the weeks ahead. The New York Times said this morning, much of the world was stunned on Wednesday by Donald Trump's stunning upset. He uses stunning twice in one sentence. The world was stunned. They're shocked. They can't believe it. The Times says his triumph holds the potential for overturning international relations. As if the Obama administration's been out there for 8 years, just making everything better and improving relations, and they don't see that the world's on fire right now? Well, now it's terrifying. 2 days ago, it was great, and Hillary was going to win by a landslide. Now it's terrifying. Now we're afraid. Now we're frightened. It says here, criticism, it's no wonder, just going back to the point about the media, it's no wonder there's been such an angry backlash against the media. I mean, how many people went out and voted for Donald Trump just because of the bias? Just because the major media was entirely in the tank for Hillary Clinton. Who knows how many? Who knows what all the motivating factors were? There's lots of people, lots of Americans who were struggling, no doubt in the Rust Belt, as they call it, and a lot of those swing states went over to Mr. Trump. Lots of things factor into it, I'm sure, and I'm no political expert. I'm no political junkie. But you look at the bias. This is from the Times again. Criticisms of trade and immigration were central to his candidacy. Mr. Trump has professed admiration for President Vladimir Putin of Russia, which is true, actually, and once called climate change a Chinese hoax. He has criticized the American-led wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he's demanded that the nation's allies foot more of the bill for their defense. So the New York Times is saying all of this in a derogatory way, of course. But still, there's an important point to be made about how the world will respond to this leader that a majority of Americans have selected. They've made their voice known. This from the EU Observer. What a Trump victory means for the EU. It says here, Trump has spoken of abandoning NATO, mutual defense, recognizing Russia's annexation of Crimea from Ukraine, scrapping EU free trade, and scrapping the Paris climate deal. He's also spoken of jailing Clinton and whipped up racist hysteria and developments that risk emboldening autocrats and populists in Europe. He's just a vile man, these newspapers are saying. He's totally unpredictable. He has zero experience in foreign policy, and we don't know who he's listening to. A U.S. diplomat who asked to remain anonymous said checks and balances do exist, but more in the domestic than in the foreign policy realm. And even with them, Trump could do a lot of damage. He could do a lot of damage in foreign policy. Here again, as if the previous administrations just had a spotless record and were out there repairing and fixing every problem in the world. The Middle East is on fire, and Russia and China are on the march, and Europe's being crippled by a refugee crisis and is coming together with urgent measures to salvage that project, that European project, and to build its own military force, to build up its own defense. And it is true, with Trump there saying, look, the EU's got to take it on more itself. This article here, this is again the EU Observer. Jonathan Ayall, a security expert at the Rusi think tank in London, said Trump might try to make a grand bargain with Putin. I mean, these are speculations. He said that a bad deal such as handing Ukraine to Russia in return for Russia helping the U.S. to fight some unspecified terrorists in some unspecified time and place would encourage the worst instincts in Moscow. This is this guy's, from this think tank, this is his speculation. But notice here, it says he added that a populist in the White House could prompt a backlash in Europe. And then later on in the piece, Trump's remarks on NATO indicate that he would force the EU to spend more on defense. Now, we've talked about this on the program here. Trump's views on the EU, on NATO, even said in his speech last night, look, we're going to make friends with other nations, but America's going to come first. This is a definite change in the face of America, and the world will react, no doubt, in a dramatic way in some of these areas. Says here, the message is that he wants the Europeans to pay their share, Ayall said. And then it quotes another one saying Europe would have to pay more and show more readiness to use force. Well, we know that's coming. We know that the European Union is going to show more readiness to solve its own problems and to use force where necessary. And so there's a lot, as I say, there's a lot more, and maybe we can get into more things that we can keep our eyes on in the days and weeks ahead, perhaps on tomorrow's program or later this week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the program. You can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
On yesterday's program, we talked a fair bit about human government and its many flaws. Herbert Armstrong talked often about the paradox in the world today, how that man is unable, utterly unable, to solve all of the problems, all of the evils. And if there's anything we've learned from the last 8 years, no human savior can solve the problems of this world or the problems of the United States. And we're going to learn that lesson all over again this time around. Look at the world in which we're living. I mentioned yesterday that prophecy in Revelation 11, which says that the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. If you put that together, Revelation 11 with Daniel 2, where it says that the governments of men, the kingdoms of this world will be smashed. They're going to be smashed. God's going to break them in pieces. He sure is. And then set up and establish the kingdom of God on this earth forever. That's the message that Jesus Christ came into Galilee preaching. The good news. The good news message. The gospel message about a soon coming government to be established on earth. Yes, indeed. Jesus Christ was born to be king. Many prophecies bring this out. But of course, most are confused on these many prophecies. They misunderstood the purpose for Christ's first coming to this earth. And so many of them reject the prophecies that talk about the second coming. Let me take you through some important history here in Matthew 4. This is the, as Mr. Armstrong called this, the Titanic battle, the Titanic struggle between Jesus Christ and the God of this world. President-elect Trump last night just talked about how grueling the process has been, going through 19 and 20 months of campaigning, all of the fighting, all of the back and forth, the grueling schedule. And yet you compare that, I'm sure he's right. I think he went to six stops the day before the election. So he, for as old as he is, he keeps up a pretty good pace. I can't knock that. But compared to this, Jesus Christ facing this kind of contest, this kind of pressure, this kind of strain, this kind of make or break moment. And really what the story is about here in Matthew 4, it's about whose government would reign over the earth. Would it be God's government, or would it be the rule or the government of Satan the devil? It says, then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterwards hungry. I mean, here he was at the absolute weakest point of his physical life. But spiritually, he was strong. Spiritually, he was focused. He knew who the enemy was. And he knew where to go for power, for strength. Verse 3, and when the tempter came to him and said, if you be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread. But he answered and said, it's written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Every word. That's what Jesus was feeding on. That was his sustenance. That's what kept him strong, this spiritual nourishment. It says, then the devil took him up into the holy city and set him on a pinnacle of the temple and said to him, if you be the Son of God, cast yourself down, for it's written, he shall give his angels charge concerning you, and in their hands shall they bear you up, lest at any time you dash your foot against a stone. I mean, Satan was quoting scripture to him. He sounded so very righteous and religious. But of course, he was twisting the meaning of that psalm. Jesus said, verse 7, it is written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. This is Christ speaking. Again, the devil took him up into an exceeding high mountain and showed him, notice this, showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said to him, all these things will I give you if you will fall down and worship me. He took him to a high mountain. The devil took Jesus Christ to this high mountain. He showed him the kingdoms of this world, the nations, the governments of this world. And he said to him, I'll give you all of that if you'll just bow down and worship me. If Christ would just bow down and worship Satan the devil. And the thing of it is, and Mr. Armstrong brings this out in his book, Mystery of the Ages, Jesus knew that Satan had those kingdoms to give. He knew that Satan was the god of this world. He didn't deny the power, this power of rule that Satan had. But he rejected that rule. He didn't bow down and worship the devil. He exercised patience, humility, self-discipline. He looked ahead to the future. He had the vision. Verse 10 says, then said Jesus unto him, get you hence, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. That's the very first and great commandment, to worship God, to fear God, to look to the Father. Well, it says in verse 11 that the devil left him, and then the angels came and ministered unto Christ. Now it was Christ who was giving the orders. Get thee hence, Satan. And Satan obeyed. And yet Satan remained on the throne of this earth. And he's been there to this day. But what's so critical for you to understand about this passage here in Matthew 4 is that Jesus Christ qualified. He qualified to replace Satan on the throne of this earth. That's what this titanic struggle was all about. It was over government. Whose government would be set up and established on this earth? Well, Christ told him to get out of here, and Satan obeyed. God left him on the throne of this earth to fulfill his purpose. It's a 6,000-year plan. But right at the end of those 6,000 years, when the devil knows that his time is short, Revelation 12 brings this out, then you have all of these prophecies that are going to be fulfilled, the ones I've been reading to you today and yesterday, Revelation 11. You can add to it Revelation 19, Daniel chapter 2, and other prophecies like those. Isaiah 9, verse 6 says, for unto us a child is born, Unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful and Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And it says in verse 7 that the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end. It's just going to go on and on and on and on. The world could never produce an administration like this one. Perfect government. Jesus Christ, it says in Luke 1, was born. He was born to be king. He qualified to be king in that titanic struggle. And then he said later in his ministry, he told Pilate, "My kingdom's not of this world." Well, are you a king then? Yes, indeed. Yes, I am. To this end was I born. And for this cause came I into the world. And yet so many people fail to understand the significance of these passages. They have some knowledge of the fact that Jesus Christ came the first time as that lamb sacrifice, but virtually no knowledge of the fact that he's prophesied to come again to rule over all the earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily radio show. Don't forget to email us. We love those emails. Send them to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today on this fast-moving program, and we'll see you tomorrow.